all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 7:06, and nice to have you here up north on this Wednesday morning, September 11th. Coming up this hour, Congressman Mark Pocan is slated to join us. There is yet another threat from congressional Republicans to shut down the government and not pass at least a temporary spending bill. Once again, turning migrants and voting into an issue larger than what actually exists out there in the real world, but are willing to shut down the government for it. We'll talk to Congressman Pocan about whether something like that could actually take place. So that's coming up. Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurro joins us in just a bit here. Matt from Germantown writes in on the text line, "Hello, I missed you all the last few weeks. The debate was fun," which makes me ask, where was Matt these past couple of weeks? You got to fill in the gaps here. What we need is, Greg, much like Rob, you know, from Tigerton, we need the full story here.
I can give you some context.
Oh, well, let's do that.
He was overseas. He was visiting in Europe. He took great pictures, and he was just having himself a nice vacation.
Wow. Okay. I was out of the loop on that one. See, I'm used to having like Rob from Tigerton right here. Look at this paragraph he sent in today. "Good morning from Tigerton. It's a hazy 57 degrees. I got a little bit of rain overnight. I've got mowing jobs around Tigerton and a run to Shawano for lawnmower parts. I remember the Valley Girl theme from the 1980s. I love the libraries for research I did on the history of Highway 29. And I love the old microfilms of old newspapers from the past, as do I." This library day is in part tied to September 11th as we honor the memory of those that we lost in that 2001 terrorist attack. It is also mentioned in our daily newsletter. Sign up for that at upnorthnewswi.com on how you can show your appreciation year-round for the firefighters and others who serve us. 855-75-CIVIC is the number to join us at. Brittany Merlot is off today, but it is once again going to be very warm and sunny across Wisconsin. Still some lingering wildfire smoke. Rob just wrote in looking at a red sun rising from the wildfires, with temperatures reaching the mid-80s in many parts of Wisconsin today, and then a couple of degrees warmer tomorrow before a slight cool down on Friday. So basically, summer not done. Don't put the sunscreen away just yet. And get out and enjoy it if you can. And again, if you're outside for any extended period, get hydrated.
Yes, Rob. And Matt, we're talking to you too.
Matt just put in on the text line, "I was in Europe for over 2 weeks. My Harris Walls hat made it to the Eiffel Tower." And he texted us a picture of him under the Eiffel Tower with his Harris Walls hat under the Olympic rings on the Eiffel Tower. That was very nice. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate that. And you can send us your info and your travel journals at 855-75-CIVIC. Again, 855-75-CIVIC. So, Greg, did you get a chance to see or read what Taylor Swift posted last night?
Pat, what a silly, silly question. Of course I did.
Okay, good for you.
Catless Mother Queen spoke. We listened.
So after the debate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz was on live on MSNBC. Rachel Maddow interrupts him and says, "We have some breaking news. I would like to just read this to you, that this post from Taylor Swift." Oh, and he had just a wonderful, heartfelt reaction to it. So I'm going to take a swig of coffee and I'm going to read you what Taylor Swift had to say. All right, here we go. "Like many of you, I watched the debate tonight. If you haven't already, now is a great time to do your research on the issues at hand and the stances these candidates take on the topics that matter to you the most. As a voter, I make sure to watch and read everything I can about their proposed policies and plans for this country. Recently, I was made aware that AI of quote-unquote me, falsely endorsing Donald Trump's presidential run, was posted to his site. it really conjured up my fears around AI and the dangers of spreading misinformation. It brought me to the conclusion that I need to be very transparent about my actual plans for this election as a voter. The simplest way to combat misinformation is with the truth. I will be casting my vote for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in the 2024 presidential election. I'm voting for her because she fights for the rights and causes I believe need a warrior to champion them. I think she is a steady-handed, gifted leader, and I believe we can accomplish so much more in this country if we are led by calm and not chaos. I was so heartened and impressed by her selection of running mate Tim Walz, who has been standing up for LGBTQ rights, IVF, and a woman's right to her own body for decades. I've done my research, and I've made my choice. Your research is all yours to do, and the choice is yours to make. I also want to say, especially to first-time voters, remember that in order to vote, you have to be registered. I also find it's much easier to vote early. I'll link where to register and find early voting dates and info in my story. With love and hope, and this is the thing, the signature, with love and hope, Taylor Swift, childless cat lady.
Yeah.
If by chance late last night you heard like a roar, like a crowd watching a Super Bowl, it was the first wave of people reading childless cat lady and roaring in approval at that post last night.
I saw that post exactly 14 minutes after it went up. It already had 1 million likes.
not a surprise. And not a surprise because of the issues that she gets at as well that need to be championed. And that's where we're going to bring in Elizabeth Montemurro in just a moment. First, let me play a couple of relevant clips from the debate. I'll just play these clips back to back. This is Kamala Harris talking about abortion bans. Donald Trump had been asked, "You've taken so many different positions on abortion. Can women trust you?" And he gave this gibberish about everybody wanted Roe v. Wade overturned and everything is all perfect. And the vice president was having none of it.
Understand, if Donald Trump were to be reelected, he will sign a national abortion ban. Understand, in his Project 2025, there would be a national abortion, a monitor that would be monitoring your pregnancies, your miscarriages. Trump abortion bans that make no exception even for rape and incest, which understand what that means. A survivor of a crime, a violation to their body, does not have the right to make a decision about what happens to their body next. That is immoral. And one does not have to abandon their faith or deeply held beliefs to agree. The government, and Donald Trump certainly, should not be telling a woman what to do with her body.
Can I just add as a personal aside, I won't get off topic too long, but how refreshing it is to hear a debate like that without a crowd, as if you're at an all-star wrestling match.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Either booing or cheering or whatever. This is how it's supposed to be done. Mm. You know, Elizabeth Montemurro joins us now because she met with a group of women in Wauwatosa last week talking about similar issues. Elizabeth, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. A little tired late night with that debate, but doing well.
Yeah, please, every newsroom is out there going, please let there be no breaking news later today when we're trying to take a nap. But you know, we've had our friends from Motherhood for Good on here for a very long time, and they were part of an event. They told us about it a week or two ago that it was coming up in Wauwatosa, and so you looked a bit more into it. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this was a group of about six or seven women, and Representative Robin Vining was moderating this discussion. And it was really just a group of women that have, you know, experienced infertility, gone through IVF treatments, had miscarriages or abortions, or just generally had pregnancy complications. And they all sat down and shared some very personal stories. I won't speak too much to it, but we've got a little bit of a roundup of what some of these women had to say.
Yeah, let's give a little bit of listen to that.
How can we be 9 years in from knowing who Trump is and still give credibility to his words? There is no action to show that this is anything other than, whoops, we've seen the poll numbers, and turns out we do need some percentage of white suburban women to vote for us, so we need to claw back the IVF just a little bit.
Every situation is so different that there's no way we can just place laws on a binary situation.
Yeah. I shouldn't be choosing what your family is or your family. I mean, that's the thing. We should just be able to support families how they choose to be.
My first miscarriage ended with an abortion. My second miscarriage ended with an abortion. Those abortions saved my life. Those abortions made it possible for me to become a mom eventually. People don't know. People don't understand how it's all so connected. And
it's like you protect an embryo, but what happens to childcare afterwards? What happens to schools afterwards? And then, you know, we're fighting for money for our schools. And that's hurting families.
So this has been a common theme since the Dobbs decision, is that women who were hesitant to talk about their personal stories now saying, look, you've got to understand that there's much more to abortion than this, you know, matter of convenience that some people describe it as. It's truly matters of life and death and future fertility.
Exactly. And, you know, several of the women spoke to that from their own personal experiences and having gone through miscarriage and you know, pregnancy loss, that they had to explain to their own parents that they were one and the same. You couldn't separate miscarriage and abortion from, you know, definitionally they're the same.
Yeah, there's just so much that folks have had to learn who had not gone through this themselves. On the other side of the break, Elizabeth is going to talk to us more about what the group had to say, including one who had some very genuine concerns about protecting IVF rights, and yet getting essentially stiff-armed by a congressman from Southeast Wisconsin. So we're going to talk more about that. It's the same kind of thing Donald Trump tried to do at the debate last night, was downplay any concerns over IVF when those concerns are quite real. First, a little sports at 7:18. The Brewers opened up a 3-game series last night in San Francisco. William Contreras had 3 hits. Garrett Mitchell had a home run. The Brewers beat the Giants 3-2. Aaron Civale allowed just 2 runs in 5 1/3 innings. He now has a 4-2 record since being traded to the Brewers from Tampa in July. Colin Ray will pitch tonight, 8:45 the first pitch, 8:10 the pregame on WRCE in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine Kenosha, WISS in Oshkosh, and WCQM in Park Falls. Badger football getting set to host Alabama at Camp Randall Stadium this weekend. And the Packers, with backup quarterback Malik Willis, are prepping for their home opener at Lambeau Field Sunday afternoon against the Indianapolis Colts. More after this. You're up north. Again, lead singer of the Buckinghams, Dennis Tufano, turned 78 years old today. You can get her a history lesson every morning at 6:50 here on Up North News Radio. 7:20 right now, we're talking to Up North News reporter Elizabeth Montemurro about reproductive health care rights and concerns, not just about abortion bans, but on things like fetal personhood legislation that could lead to a de facto ban on in vitro fertilization. And it came up in the debate last night where, again, Vice President Kamala Harris expressed these concerns. Donald Trump tried to minimize them and said, oh, you know what? They, in Alabama, after the Supreme Court made that one ruling, they worked right away to protect IVF. And no, they did not. No, it was a temporary fix that they put in place. And when they tried to put something in place in Congress, Republicans voted it down. So no, IVF is still not protected. And Elizabeth, that's a real concern that somebody in that group in Tulsa brought to their congressman recently.
Yeah, exactly. You know, several of the mothers spoke about how they've reached out to legislators for support. You know, all they're asking is support and the freedom to start a family on their own terms. And for a lot of these women, IVF is the only way to do that. And so they've reached out to their representatives at this, you know, in Senate and in Congress, you know, at the House. And one mom reached out to her representative, Congressman Brian Stile, you know, she lives in the far southeast corner of the state, and the meeting didn't really go as she was expecting.
Let's give a listen.
He was in the meeting. He like came and you're like, wow, that's unusual to begin with. Yes. And he showed up and I start explaining the bill. I like know my stuff, right? I'm it's not gonna be there for 10 minutes. I'm cutting out all the fluff, getting to the point. Here's the bill. We want to protect access to IVF after what happened in Alabama. We can't have it become illegal. And he says, that's not gonna happen. Next point. I said, well, with all due respect, there's nothing to indicate to me that wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. He's like, I fully support IVF. You don't need to worry about that. I said, you fully support it. Will you vote for the bill? Yes. Next question. And that was to a constituent. The man needs me.
Yes. I mean, that, again, the way that some elected officials will talk to their own constituents, you know, as if they are opponents or adversaries when they bring up something real. I know it certainly struck you, and I'm sure it affected a lot of the other people who were in that group hearing this, these kinds of obstacles to just expressing your concerns.
Exactly. And, you know, those battling infertility, it's already a very uncertain thing for these individuals. And several went on to say that when they are met with that little bit of resistance to their elected official, that, you know, it's really just adding more uncertainty to an already precarious situation.
Right. And that's what, again, people are going to be voting on. We always hear about the vibes that are out there. And frankly, one of them is if women, if families, husbands, if they're getting this vibe that, you know, they're getting smoke blown in their face, you know, with empty promises and empty reassurances. I mean, that's as, to them, that's as valid an issue to vote on as any firm policy position. Is when you give an impression like Brian Stile just did, I mean, that matters. That makes an impact on people.
Exactly, Pat.
So to learn more about what Motherhood for Good has been up to, head over to Motherhood for Good on Instagram or motherhoodforgood.com and learn more about the other activities and ways that they're getting together to help people learn more about the issues at hand and to learn more about this story and other important issues about the campaign. Follow what Elizabeth Montemurrow does over on our website, upnorthnewswi.com, or on social media where she's making videos aplenty that help explain the issues in the 2024 race. Elizabeth, good to see you. Get a little rest today. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Pat.
All right. It is 7:25 right now. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has been busy taking up a couple of election-related issues. The justices wrestled on Tuesday with whether a Republican had standing to bring a lawsuit that challenges the use of a mobile voting van in 2022 and seeks to ban their use in any future election. Such vans were used just once in Racine in a primary election in 2022. It allowed voters to cast absentee ballots in the 2 weeks leading up to the election. The city of Racine, the Democratic National Committee, and others say there is nothing in state law that prohibits the use of voting vans. Whatever the court decides is not going to affect the November election, since a ruling isn't expected until later. No towns or cities have asked to use alternative voting locations for this election, but the ruling will determine whether mobile voting sites can be used in future elections. Liberal Justice Jill Karofsky said she had a hard time seeing how the voter who brought the lawsuit, Racine County Republican Party Chair Ken Brown, had been injured by simply witnessing the use of a mobile voting van. If he's not harmed by the use of a mobile voting van, does he have standing? The voter, Ken Brown, filed a complaint because he believed an election official was breaking the law, according to an attorney for the conservative group Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. But a representative for the Wisconsin Elections Commission argued the voter in this case wasn't personally harmed by the use of this van and therefore can't bring the lawsuit. It really, again, just comes back to a simple concept. There is only one political class that is working to make it harder to vote. making it harder for qualified voters to vote, while others are trying to make voting more accessible, more convenient, with safeguards in place to make sure that they can legally cast a ballot. And whether that's done through in-person absentee balloting at a clerk's office or somewhere out in the public, like using a van or a table at a festival. If there are those safeguards in place, I mean, really, for folks who are defending, gun shows instead of gun shops, shouldn't you be on that side as well? That, you know, access is access if you say the proper safeguards are in place. Meanwhile, justices also expressed concerns Tuesday about the motives of a conservative activist seeking guardianship records in an effort to find ineligible voters, while also appearing to cast doubts that the documents should be made public. The lawsuit tests the line between protecting personal privacy rights and ensuring that ineligible people cannot vote. Former travel agent Ron Hewer and the Wisconsin Voters Alliance allege that the number of ineligible voters doesn't match the count on Wisconsin's voter registration list. They want the Supreme Court to rule that counties must release records filed when a judge determines that someone isn't competent to vote, so that those names can be compared to the voter registration list. Again, looking for the metaphorical needle in a haystack. If there are, as Eric Hovde and others claim, if there are people who have been ruled not competent to vote and they're in care facilities of some sort or another and they were allowed to vote, that would indeed be wrong and any safeguards there should be toughened. But folks like Eric Hovde want to throw the baby out with the bathwater and basically try to take away as many rights as possible of people in these care communities to vote, when the answer, of course, is to expand voting opportunities but enforce your safeguards. Congressman Mark Buchanan is going to talk about the latest shutdown threat in Washington, D.C., coming up after. Tommy Shaw from Styx is 71 years old today. It is coming up on 7:35 on this Wednesday, September 11th, and we're joined by Congressman Mark Pocan. We're going to talk a bit about the debate last night, as well as some of the election issues at hand, the potential threat of another government shutdown as well. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Pat. I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. I actually want to start, though, with something about meeting with constituents, because we had in our last segment, we played some tape from a woman who met with her Congressman Brian Stile to express concern about protecting IVF. And he, you know, according to her, kind of brushed her off and said, next question, that's not really an issue. I don't know Brian Stile. I've never met him. He might be a very lovely and polite person most of the time. What I'm getting at, though, having been a state senator, you having been a legislator and now a member of Congress, I mean, when you're meeting with constituents, unless they're being a jerk to you, and even if they are, I mean, man, you have to be on your best behavior all the time. All the time.
Yeah, I mean, if you're sitting down with folks, you're there to listen. You may not agree with them. Sometimes you're getting facts. Like, you know, I always think in some ways people, you know, say lobbyists are evil, and it's not true, because sometimes they're the ones who have the information that you don't have. You may not agree with it, but you still should be open to hearing from anyone about anything. You know, I think Brian, just to be somewhat fair, is Brian's maybe problem is he doesn't like to take a position on any issue. He wants to be that flavorless Jell-O on the plate that'll taste like it, whatever it's next to, because he doesn't want to upset anyone. And I'm guessing that he just didn't agree, which I don't agree with his position on fertilization. But I think that's my guess, is he just didn't want to say something that someone would disagree with. You know, as you know, that's part of our job. Not everyone is going to agree with you on everything, but, you know, at least explaining your reasoning is what's expected.
Exactly. And we've already mentioned that Trump also in the debate tried to wave off concerns about IVF, but these are very real concerns based on what's happening in Washington, D.C. and in state capitals all around. What was your overall impression of what you saw last night from Vice President Harris and former President Trump?
Pat, I feel about 100 and maybe even 1,000 times better than I did the morning after the last debate. Bluntly, I think, you know, what we saw was a completely unhinged Donald Trump. I mean, anyone who looks at that and says that's presidential is watching way too many movies and not understanding reality. From, you know, they're eating dogs and cats to his concept of a plan for healthcare after 9 years, to calling her a Marxist, to claiming that they want to do transgender operations on people who come across the border. I mean, everything is so, you know, I don't know where he gets this stuff, and it's just so bizarre. But you did not see a president there. And then you saw a president with Kamala Harris. In fact, that she did exactly what I was hoping for, is just to show people that we already know on resume she's extremely competent. But if you can see that someone that you think you can trust and you know will have your back over the nut who was raging during the debate, I think that's what needed to happen last night, and it did.
I think that there were some real light bulb moments for people who may consider themselves leaning toward Trump but not fully committed. Among them, the way that he answered, you know, issues on abortion, the way he kept coming back to migrants. I joked before that if you'd have asked him about the Packer loss, he would have found a way to blame migrants at the southern border, that they'd say, maybe this guy is only a one-trick pony. But my favorite, if you will, in quotes, was, and you alluded to this, when ABC's Lindsay Davis said, after 9 years, will you finally tell us your healthcare plan? And again, his answer was, I have the concepts of a plan. And you could just sense, again, not a ton of people, but the number's not zero. You can sense people going, are you kidding me? 9 years into this and you still don't have a healthcare plan? What are you running for president for?
Yeah, and you're right. He kept going back to the border because he thinks he has something on it. And, you know, he does in a way. I mean, Congress hasn't acted for a couple decades as it should, and the border issue is a mess. And he did block a bill that could have passed this year to help fix some of the immediate situation. But he is obsessed on that issue because he thinks he has some leverage with it with voters. But, you know, I think people just saw someone who is unhinged. I mean, this is worse than the guy who yells at you to get off his lawn. He's yelling at you about being in his country, right? And I think people just, that comparison was enough that people can see one person is ready to be president and the other person, maybe their expiration date is a little overdone.
I do expect to see more stories along that vein now that he is, you know, going to be what would be the oldest person to run and win the presidency. So we may come back to that in just a moment. But, you know, again, in the debate, he disavowed any knowledge of Project 2025. I have no idea what this thing is, written by all of my, you know, former aides and partners and allies and colleagues. And it is without a doubt still gaining traction with more and more voters, and you are, I guess, to put it kindly, you're doing your part to make sure that more voters understand what Project 2025, what all it contains.
Yeah, I'm going around the state, you know, and the Democratic Party is helping get the message out, but we did a Project 2025 town hall in Madison a few weeks ago. Last week we did it in Green Bay. This Saturday we're going to be in Janesville at 4 o'clock doing a town hall. Monday, I'm going to the AFL convention, and then we're going to get up to Eau Claire and La Crosse and all around the state talking about this. But you're right. I mean, I've never seen someone disavow something that he is so close to. 140 of his former staff, cabinet secretaries, appointees are people who wrote parts of the 920 pages of Project 2025, which is the roadmap for the Trump presidency. And he can say anything he wants to try to disavow it, but the connections are so clear. I mean, the main architect or promoter from the Heritage Foundation, he was on a plane with, and he said that they are the architects of a plan moving forward. I mean, it's inescapable. And when people see most of what's in there, They don't like it. I mean, getting rid of overtime pay protections, saying that everyone would automatically have to go on to Medicare Advantage as a default option when they are retiring and going on to at 65. You know, getting rid of the Department of Education, having people surveil pregnancies in every single state. I mean, go on and on. The Department of Health and Human Services would now be the Department of Life. Like, this is almost like directly out of the movie Idiocracy, and yet it's real. And Donald Trump is sending out mailings in Wisconsin trying to distance himself, but clearly 140 of his former staff and cabinet secretaries and appointees wrote parts of it. You are affiliated no matter how hard you say you're not, and people just need to really get to know what's in it, and then they'll realize not just the terrible performance of an unhinged old man last night, but what that unhinged old man will have a lot of his lackeys doing if he gets elected.
Well, he didn't want to talk about that plan. Vice President Harris did want to talk about her plans. At what point late in the debate, she used the phrase, "Let's talk about the plans already," because it was there was a lot of 30,000 foot view conversation, whereas she wanted to get back to actually talking about plans for the middle class. Trump did not want to talk about plans. And it became quite clear that the vice president has some very tangible things that she would like to get passed, which makes sense if you consider that the Biden-Harris administration, what they were known for, was passing tangible plans. The American Rescue Plan, the CHIPS and Science Act, the bipartisan infrastructure law, and while we can argue all day whether Democrats have done enough to promote those things, they're still things. They're things that you're actually getting done.
Well, and yeah, you know, I mean, again, that first 2 years was so successful in getting things done, making things here again, you know, computer chips, we only made 12% of the chips we use. It's important, we saw through COVID, to get those things done, investing in renewable energies and helping people to buy things that are more energy efficient, as well as saving on healthcare costs, negotiating for drug prices, you know, capping insulin. And as she said last night, she wants to cap price of insulin for everyone. I mean, there are concrete examples. And with Donald Trump, you had people eating dogs and cats. Like, the comparison couldn't have been more stark. And that's why he didn't want to talk about plans, because he can't talk about Project 2025. And that's his plan. So he had to talk about everything from, you know, she's a Marxist, which I enjoyed her face during that, because, you know, this guy, I mean, I don't know if he's talking about Groucho or Carl, but he has no idea what he's even saying.
No, I mean, there was so much being thrown at the wall to see what would stick. And again, looking for some kind of a viral moment. And instead, like the vice president wanted to do, it was talk about real and significant issues. And Congressman, we may have real significant issues again in Washington, because again, in back on Earth One, it's budget time for Congress, where you come together, you reach some compromises, you pass your spending bills for the next year. That's not happening. We already know that's not happening. The only thing that the Republican-led House has to get done is pass a temporary spending bill, and then you'll pick up, you know, where you left off next year. The temporary spending bill, last I saw, appears to be in danger because Speaker Mike Johnson wants to attach something related to what, migrants and voting?
Yeah, I'll tell you, Pat, it's just so hard to talk about around here. This session, you know, I've been doing local, state, and federal politics for 3 decades now, and I've never been in a body that's as inept as this current House body with the Republican leadership, because they can't govern. Kevin McCarthy really is to blame. He changed the rules. He put crazies on committees that you can't put the crazies on, you know, that love to cause all the disruption. And, you know, we have our budget bills are due September 30th, 12 bills, and also the farm bill. We already extended it for a year and we still didn't get it done. And we're not taking that up yet. Hopefully we will in the next 2 weeks while we're here. But instead of being serious about having a continuing resolution to keep government open, they're adding something about proof of citizenship while voting that, you know, would just have all sorts of negative impacts that has nothing to do with the 12 appropriation bills that we have to get done or else we close down government. And they're playing games to appease the crazies. And the crazies have come out and said they still don't like it, because crazy people don't like normal things, right? So the other thing is they're trying to do this until March rather than December, which, you know, we should be able to get it done. It really is, you know, there for negotiation. They just have to start negotiating. But Mike Johnson wants to either be minority leader or speaker should they get lucky enough to hold the majority. And he thinks that even voting on a budget bill gets the crazies upset. So he wants to extend it far past the date that he would be able to get their votes. Like, this place is, you know, we have a concept of the idea of how to pass a budget bill, but we don't know how to do it. And that's all because of this inept right now Republican majority.
It's such a soap opera, unnecessarily. Yeah. So instead we get, like we said, talk about, you know, migrants voting and election integrity. And if I saw correctly last week, one of your Wisconsin colleagues, Derek Van Orden in the 3rd District, was part of a quote unquote election integrity training session or something like that. And I question whether somebody insurrection adjacent, as I refer to the congressman, should really be a part of that. But it does remind us that from now till Election Day, we're going to continue to face, if not direct threats, then rhetorical threats to the stability of voting on November 5th.
Look, there's a bipartisan, nonpartisan group called Democracy First that in every state is trying to get people running for office to commit to honoring the election results. You didn't think you'd have to get a commitment for that, but we need to. Reid Ribble, former Republican member of Congress from Green Bay, and I are leading the efforts in Wisconsin. And all I know is in the 3rd Congressional District, Derek Van Orden has not committed to abide by the election results Rebecca Cook has. So, you know, he can do whatever he wants to attend. But if you can't say you're going to honor the election results, we've got some real problems. And, you know, Derek has got even a few more than just that. In fact, just yesterday, we might have some footage for folks to see in a committee talk about Trump being unhinged. Derek way went unhinged on a couple of Democratic members, and he had to publicly apologize later. We're trying to get that video. But, you know, this is, if you think Donald Trump was the old grumpy man trying to get you off the lawn, Derek Van Orden.
Well, hopefully Brian Stile can't bottle up that video as well. So we'll keep an eye out for that.
It's not his jurisdiction. So good. We're working at it.
Congressman Mark Pocan, thank you as always. Take care out there. Safe travels to you.
Appreciate it. Take care.
All right. Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show is next. You're up north. As mentioned before, the Beatles' Help album went to number one this day in 1965. This is Ringo doing a what we all know as a Buck Owens song. And it just made me think that this was appropriate for Todd here, because he's always acting naturally wherever he is, which in this case is apparently stalking a movie premiere in Brookfield. You're out in a hotel parking lot someplace, aren't you?
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. Speaking of putting movies... It's the world premiere today here in Waukesha of Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers World Series run. And we are here today. We're going to be doing our show from noon until 2 at the beautiful Marcus Theater. The big, I guess, Marcus Majestic, isn't it, Greg? Something like that. The big Cineplex. And what's really cool, guys, is that the two main people that made this documentary film about the 82 Brewers are Sean Hannish, originally from Brookfield, and Kelly Call, originally from Burlington, Wisconsin. Sean went on to has a very successful film career out in Los Angeles. And of course, Kelly, just the humblest guy you'd ever want to meet, and went on to be one of the most powerful people in Hollywood as president of CBS Entertainment for over 20 years. They're both going to be here and be on the show. We hope to have a couple of former Brewers from that 82 team on as well. And you never know who else might stop by. So after the election coverage last night, I got in pretty early this morning, as it turned out, at the beautiful Hampton Inn here in Milwaukee, Brookfield. And I drove by the Republican Party. Actually, did a little jog this morning by the Republican Party of Waukesha County headquarters. And the people that were there, they kind of look like maybe their dogs and cats got eaten. I'm not sure.
Man. Come on. Jeez.
The opinions of Todd Alba do not reflect the opinions of Up North News Radio featuring Pat Kreitlow.
Thank you very much for that fair disclaimer. What did you think overall of the event, shall we say?
What adjectives are left, guys? I mean, astounded, unprecedented. If I'm being serious, I thought that Kamala Harris and her team did exactly what they intended to do, bait Donald Trump. He took the bait nearly every time. One person appeared presidential and ready to be in the White House. The other person appeared that he's ready to be in a nursing home. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, he needs help. I mean,
if he does, Eric Hovde's not going to let him vote. So, I mean,
as it turns out,
I actually that's how I started things off. You know, at 6:05 this morning was reading a post from somebody who said, it's funny how for weeks everyone telegraphed she's going to bait him, and her team was like, we're going to bait him, and he managed to act normal for like 3 minutes, and then she said one thing about crowd size, and it was like feeding a gremlin after midnight. And it is so true, because for the first like 3 to 5 minutes, I thought, okay, he's being very mellow here. I actually thought he looked really tired during that, but at least he was not, you know, being his rally self. But yeah, five, 6 minutes in, he was off to the races, and you could see, again, the people that see that every day either hate it or love it, but a whole lot of folks in the middle who don't pay attention to this stuff as closely as we do,
right,
had to just look at him and go, what happened to this guy?
I was watching a little bit of MSNBC this morning before I got on with you guys, and one of the guys there who watches, you know how these, so they have all these quote-unquote undecided people, and they do polls, which where they dial if you like something that's being said or not. Like, all the independents across the board, and this was a position of unity between the Trump and the Harris campaigns, all of their dial independent voters just went bonkers when Trump spoke, basically, all last night. I'd credit her by name. I just have mad cow disease here. But the rapid response person for Lincoln Project last night tweeted this out. I'll clean it up for morning radio. She said, normally, Donald Trump has to pay a woman to beat his posterior as bad as Kamala Harris did last night.
Oh, my.
I thought that was pretty good.
It was. I did tweet at some point, you know, I'd like to report a murder. Haven't seen one on live TV like that since Lee Harvey Oswald. But it was.
Still too soon.
1963 is still too soon. Okay.
It's still okay. Too soon for Lincoln jokes. So.
Sure. I think that it proved what a lot of people suspected going in, is that Trump has a level of hubris or arrogance or whatever you want to call it, that felt like, well, he's come this far in life without getting, you know, any kind of comeuppance, whether it's from the legal system or whatever. And when the voters gave it to him, he just denied that it existed. You can't deny what everybody saw on the TV there last night.
No, you absolutely can't. I think an interesting point, I was talking to one of my friends who's not particularly political last night afterwards, and they said, you know, yeah, I saw it, but how many of these quote-unquote undecided people, there's a lot of people who are not the political nerds like we are. I think there are a lot of people who didn't see it. But I think that anybody who tuned in last night, the choice has to be pretty clear. I think, and really, you know, America basically said, the night can't get any better for Kamala Harris, and Taylor Swift said, hold my beer.
Hold my cat, right?
And then Taylor Swift does the endorsement last night.
Signing it, childless cat lady, Taylor Swift, which was perfect. Cat. Perfect.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not sure how it could get much better for the vice president last night.
Yeah, I like that. Mark writes in on Facebook, in addition to saying some states now allow killing babies, Trump just came to the spin room, announced that he had tons of polls saying that he won the debate 92-6. Right. What the hell does that even mean?
What is that? Huh?
Yeah, 92-6.
And again, first off, if you're the one coming into the spin room, it means you lost. I mean, you're trying to do damage control at that point. Another post that somebody from listening on WAUK just sent in, and I love this one, was, right now, Kamala is killing a baby in its 78th year. And it's, I mean, again,
I think the quick serious point to make that Congressman Pocan made, I think, right before I came on, look at Derek Van Orten, the anger, the hate, the unhinged. Look at Donald Trump last night. Look at Donald Trump and Mozambique in Wisconsin over the weekend. There is a theme here, gentlemen, of anger and hate coming out of the MAGA base and the MAGA candidates, and I think that is going to affect votes across Wisconsin.
Without a doubt. And so for more about this and more about the Just a Bit Outside movie turning into Todd Alba coming up today at noon, Mr. Alba, thank you so much. Take care.
Always a pleasure, guys. Take care.
All right. Mr. Bach will be back at 10 o'clock for Matt and Air on Air.
Heck yeah.
What you want to tell us?
Oh, we got Mary Hayes, who you actually interviewed at the DNC, coming up on the show at 10:30 to talk about the Apostle Islands. And then we have public service announcement at 11:33. So if you have any questions, text them in for Dr. Hanks. Did I say Dr. Hanks or Dr. Lyerly?
You said Dr. Hanks.
Good. All right. Good. Yay.
Okay. Sounds good, guys. Thank you so much. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network, building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Thanks to today's guests, Congressman Mark Pocan, Melissa Baldoff, and Elizabeth Montemurro. And thanks to all of you for being here today. Follow us at UpNorthNewsWI.com. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Up North.